School of the Master, Lecture 10, Relative Observations, Temporary. School of the Master, Lecture 10, Relative Observations, Temporary. Well, now, all things relative are temporary. All things relative come and go and start and stop. All things relative are just temporary. Now, all things absolute are not, but we don't see the absolute. We do see the temporary. Now, why do we see the temporary and why do we observe the temporary? Why do we pay attention to the temporary when we know that the temporary is not going to be everlasting? We know the temporary is not going to be continuous. It's not going to be something that we're always working with. We know that. To illustrate that, Rex just came to me after he had finished his supper, and we'd finished our supper, and his normal procedure was to go out in the television room and to get my little blanket that I use to cover my feet while I watch a video and bring it to me. And that signals the idea that I am supposed to make a piece of bread with peanut butter on for him so that he can have it. Well, now, he enjoyed my dinner very much tonight. I had two pieces of chicken thigh legs, and I had a nice salad and everything. And I gave him portions of the chicken, and I gave him portions of the knuckle bone and so forth. And he loved it. But he thought he has to have that peanut butter on a piece of bread because that is something that he always gets after supper. And he goes out and gets the blanket and brings it in to me here and puts it on my lap saying, "Now, this is what I do for you. Now you make that piece of toast for me with peanut butter on it." Well, now, this evening I said to Rex, "No. You had a nice dinner, and we don't need to build up a habit like that. We don't need to build up an illusionary type of situation that does not have to be all the time. It's a temporary thing." And so I told him my temporary observations of the illusionary thing, and I said, "No." And he looked at me, and he danced around, and he circled around, jumped up and down, and he said, "Hey, this is me. You know this is time for peanut butter on bread." And I said, "No." "No." I held up my hands and I said, "No." And I said, "Now sit down." So he looked at me and he said, "This is a different approach. Usually I'm able to con you into giving me the peanut butter and bread, but not tonight. Why is it? Why is it I can't do that tonight? What is different about tonight?" And then I said, "Sit down, down." And so he says, "You're definite, aren't you? You're definite." And I said, "Yes, I'm definite." And so he decided, "Okay, I'll go outside." And so he went outside, and he's amusing himself there. Now, in our life, many temporary things come up. Many temporary experiences come into our experience, and many temporary things demand our observations of them. And as we look at them, what do we see? We see something that is relative, something that's just temporary, something that's just for the moment. And then when we say no, then it's something else again. Now, sometimes things happen when we don't take charge of it. And we should learn to see these temporary things coming. And as we learn to see these temporary things coming, then we watch them and we handle them so they don't have a backfire on us. But the temporary observations are always happening to us in the relative world. And whether we like it or not, they're very much a part of us. Now, we must ask ourselves one simple question. Do we want these relative observations that are temporary to be happening again and again? Do we want them to take place again and again? If not, We have to be smarter than the average bear. We have to be on top of these things. They are relative. They do happen. Now, we know that Rex is going to do this thing. And we know that if he doesn't get his own way and he doesn't get his treat, he will find another treat. And so we should be smarter than the average bear. When we don't give him a treat, then we follow him and we make sure he doesn't make a treat of something else. But if we don't follow him, then he's going to do that. Now, and we don't like the results of that. So what is it that we can do? We always have to be on top of the temporary experiences. Rex brought the blanket in from the TV room and put it on my lap and said, give me my piece of bread with peanut butter on it. And I said, no, not tonight. He says, oh, okay. So then he goes for something else. Now, I set a new cause in motion, but I didn't set the new cause in motion to cover all the bases. And I have to set the new cause in motion to cover all the bases in my relative world, because my relative world is like that. And now, I am smart enough, but not always wise enough. I am smart enough to say, Rex, come here, sit down, stay. And if I have him do that, he won't get himself into trouble. If I don't take charge of him as a temporary observation, he is going to do something that I don't want him to do. It's not bad what he's doing, and it's not good what he's doing. He's just doing something I don't want him to do. Now, do you ever do things in your world that you don't really want yourself to do? Do you ever have things do things in your world that you really don't want to have them do? Now, you are the creator of your world. I am the creator of my world. And I create all the temporary illusions, the observations that I see in my world. I create all of them in my mind. And I should be smart enough to say, hey, I'm the creator of my world. I am going to create every single experience exactly the way I want it to be. I'm going to create every circumstance in my life exactly like I want it to be. So I want Rex to come and sit by me. And I know that that is going to avoid other complications. And so I have him sit. But no, he goes wandering off and I don't stop him. I should immediately get up and go and take him and bring him to my side and stop him. But I don't do that. And because I don't do that, then I pay the consequences of having him do things that I don't want him to do. Now, what am I going to do? Am I powerful enough in my thinking? Am I powerful enough in my mind? Am I powerful enough in my attitude that I can just say, Rex, sit, and have him sit? Sure. But I must be persistent in my thought. I must not say, Rex, sit, and then I see him get up and walk away, and I say, oh, he loves to do that, and I empower that. When I say sit to him, I have to ensure that he sits. And it's not a hard or harsh thing, but it's just a definite thing. I say, sit. Now, we all do things often in our life where we don't take responsibility for it. And when we do them, and we don't get the result that we want, we say, oh, Rex just doesn't behave all the time, or oh, this doesn't work, or that doesn't work, or this is bigger than I am, or something. Now, do we really mean that? Do we really mean that? Now, it is so easy for us to, when I take my walk in the morning, I walk around this property here just like a young spring chicken. I feel great. I feel wonderful. My thoughts are always on positive things. I'm thinking of very positive ideas. I think I'm a wonderful guy. It's a wonderful place here. I'm happy as can be. And I'm walking like a young prince dancing around the property. And then I go through the shopping malls, and I'm really not interested in walking to the shopping mall. I'm not interested in going shopping. I'm not against it, but I'm not interested in doing it. And so I am aware that my legs don't want to walk as harmoniously as they do in the morning. Now, Why don't my legs walk harmoniously always, like they do in the morning, all at any time during the day? Because there are times that I feel that I don't want to do something, or I don't feel encouraged to do something. Now, back to our dogs. We have a dog, two dogs, and if I have a treat in my hand, the dogs are all over me. They will go wherever I want them to go. They will not be tired. If the ground will not be too hot outside. Things will not be upsetting for them in any way to make them unhappy. They just go, 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 go. And they feel so dynamic and they feel so wonderful. And I walk around, and as long as I have the treats in my hand, they will go anywhere with me. Now, why should a treat cause a dog to not be concerned that it's too hot for him to walk, that it should not be concerned that he doesn't want to follow, should not be concerned that he has a mind of his own or that he has some ideas that he wants to follow? Why should I have that? Why should I have that? I have that because the temporary observations I make are just temporary on my relative world, and I empower them to think that they're actual. Now, we talked about Caesar and walking with his 50 dogs out at one time and all the dogs behaving beautifully. Now, what was it we said about Caesar? Were the dogs well-trained? Were the dogs obedient? Were the dogs good? No! Caesar was good. Caesar was well-trained. He had his thoughts under total control. His idea was that these dogs will harmoniously go with me wherever I want them to go. These dogs will do anything I ask them to do. These dogs are my dogs. These dogs love me and want to be with me and want to do anything I ask them to do. They want to do anything I ask them to do. They want to do anything I ask them to do. They want to do anything I ask them to do. Now, that's what he has drummed into his mind about himself. If Caesar thought the dogs wanted to do what they wanted to do, what would happen? He'd lose absolute, total control of anything he did with those dogs. Those dogs would not be interested in him. He'd have a handful of treats and they wouldn't even come to him. Because they're out, loose, off the leash. They're going to run all over the place. They're going to chase all the squirrels and the rabbits that they can find. They're going to have a great old time. That's not in Caesar's mind. In his mind are that his pets, his animals, these dogs, love to follow his commands, love to do what he asked them to. And he has not the right to do that. He has the opportunity to do that. Not the responsibility to do it, but the opportunity. And when he says that to these animals, whether it's relative or not, whether the observations are not going to stand up to anything, that are going to be very temporary, doesn't make any difference to him. When Caesar is walking his way with those pets, they are one with him and he is one with them. Now, when I do things with Rex, one dog, here I have only one dog to concern myself with. Can I have my consciousness consistently on whatever I want Rex to be doing? Do I say, Rex misses me? No, he doesn't miss me. Rex wants to be with me? He doesn't want to be with me. Rex loves me? He doesn't love me. Rex needs me? He doesn't need me. Rex enjoys it when I give him treats? He doesn't enjoy it when I give him treats. Do you know what Rex really loves and wants? He wants what Caesar is giving to his dogs. Caesar is being the pack master. He's being the pack leader. He's being the pack master. He's leading those dogs by his self-confidence in the fact that those dogs will do anything he asks them to do. We live in a relative world, and we live in relative observations of that world, very temporary. But the thing is, are they temporary or are they real? What is the real thing for Caesar and the dogs? The real thing is that there are no dogs there. There is no activity. There's only Caesar with his mind saying, all dogs in my world walk lovingly with me, walk harmoniously with me. All dogs do everything I ask them to do. Now, as I said, I walk in the store and oh, my legs feel, I sort of push my head. I don't want to walk too well. I don't want to do this. And I'm in the parking lot and I'm walking along here. Now, if somebody had shouted at me and said, for instance, my mother had called and she said, Herbie, what are you doing? I would come alive. My legs would carry me to her side as eagerly and happily, and I would say, wow, 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 you know. And I would not think about my legs. I would not think about walking. I would not pay attention to what my legs were doing or not doing. I would only pay attention to the fact that Mom was there. Now, true, Mom's long since moved down to her other dimensions, but the thing is, I say, if she were there to distract me, I would be absolutely distracted from everything. I would be running to her like some teenage kid running to his mom. You see, in our world, all of our experiences are relative. All of our experiences are observations we're making of the relative world, and they're just temporary. But what kind of temporary observations do you want to make? Do you want to make an observation of anything that is contrary to your highest and your best? Do you want to think about anything, talk about anything, live anything in your consciousness that's not really what you are? Well, every time you think that you're not whole and perfect, every time you think that your legs are not moving properly, every time you give attention to that. And if, for instance, Ellen didn't feel like getting up, and she was kind of tired after a long, busy day, and then she looked over and she saw a little love about to fall off the table. What's he doing on the table in the first place? But he's going to fall off the table. Ellen is up like a flash. She runs over to him. She picks him up and she doesn't let him fall. It wouldn't hurt him to fall on the floor. He'd just roll and walk away. But she loves her dog so much. She wants to take care of him so much. She worries about him. Now, if she were to think that little love always is in the right place at the right time doing the right thing, never thinking about little love hurting himself, never think about little love needing to be protected from something or other. If Caesar ever worried about any of his dogs, Caesar did one program one time, and he did it with Will Smith's wife and their dog. And the dog was out with them in the pack, out and running wild and enjoying things. And Caesar hadn't come to some his conclusions at that time. But the dog was bit by a rattlesnake. And the dog was bit by a rattlesnake very badly. And for some reason or other, the dog succumbed to the rattlesnake bite. Now, why did that have to happen? Then they make a big television show out of it. They make a big television show out of the dog being bitten, how people have to be careful about that. Why can Caesar take 50 dogs and walk them through the wilds of Southern California mountains and never see a rattlesnake, never see anything, in a rabbit or a squirrel, anything to distract his dogs from his attention? You see, we have the ability to have our one-pointed attention be whatever we want it to be. And if we want our one-pointed attention to be rattlesnakes, well, they'll be there. If we want our one-pointed attention to be everything that's good and beautiful, that'll be there. If I want my one-pointed attention to be that Rex always walks by my side at all times, well, he's not having any fun. Hey! You're telling me he doesn't have any fun walking by my side? He loves to walk by my side. But no, he wants to go out and play. That's his nature as a dog. His nature as a dog is to go out and run around and jump up and down. And That is not his nature. His nature is to walk by my side and be my number one companion and walk with me and be only interested in me. Now, what crazy, idiotic, stupid attitude would be in my mind that would say that my dog wants to do anything other than to be with me? Where would I get such a crazy idea? Why do people have pets? Do they have pets so that they can be a wild animal? So that they can run loose in the jungle? Do they want to, if you ever try to put a pet loose in the jungle after you've tamed him and you housebroken him, he'll be killed because he doesn't know how to protect himself. He only knows how to walk with his master. He only knows how to love and be loved. He only knows how to be a gentle being. And when you let him back out in nature again, then he has to fend for himself. And when he's with you, you fend for him. You are his master. You are your pack, the pack leader for the dog, whether it's one dog or whether it's more. Now, why is it we don't want to take responsibility for that? Why is it we want to say in the relative world that they could be hurt? Problems could happen. Why do we always want to do this? And this is not just you or me, it's everybody. It's everybody. Because we all think that this world is relative. We think this world is a temporary world. We think this world is a world where things come and go. They live and die. Where they can have sicknesses and they get hungry. They need water. They need air to breathe. That's what we think this world is all about. And have at it. Enjoy thinking that's what the world is all about. You're only fooling yourself. Who is the creator of this world? Each of us individually. We create our own world. Why then do we have to create protection for our pets or ourselves? Why do we have articles in national magazines now saying that the dryness and the weather and the heat is causing many things? And then in their second breath, in the same article, they say, but there will always be plenty to eat. There will always be plenty of products, and there will always be plenty of crops. And they say that in the same article where they say the heat is disturbing the growth of the crops. Now, why do they say that? Wouldn't it be wonderful if the articles were saying, if everybody on Earth, or if any individual on Earth, would sincerely say, all is in divine order now for everything. Caesar with his dogs, 50 of them, all is in divine order. He is divine order. He is the creator of the order with his dogs. You and I are the creator of our lives. We're the creator of the order of our world. We're the creator of the world around us, which is with all of its problems, which we have named. But when we name them and claim them, then we live by them. Now, what is it that you want out of life? What is it that you want out of every experience of every day of your life? If you're in the school of the master and you're thinking about being a positive person, where do you start? Do you start telling other people how to live? If you're in the school of the master, do you tell other people how to be successful, how to be happy, how to be whole and perfect, how to live joyously and wonderfully and abundantly and healthily? Do you tell people that? Well, if you do, that means that's what you see them being. If you do, then that means that's the world that you are creating for yourself. Now, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Well, are you seeing people needing to have your advice so they too can enjoy it? Or are you seeing people enjoying it because you're enjoying it? And they are your reflection. They are the pure image of your thought. They are the pure image of whatever you believe about yourself and how you have created them. What have we said the world is for us? It's our mirror, our spiegel, you know, it's our mirror. It's that which reflects back to us what we are. What are we shining out into the world? Are we saying, there now is peace on earth and it began with me? Are we saying, I live in a peaceful world? Are we saying that as I drive down the freeway, my way is open and clear before me? We don't say other people have to get out of the way, other people have to do it. We just say, my way is open and clear before me. And if we ever let ourselves get just a teensy-weensy irritated at how someone else drives, then they will keep irritating us more and more until we do something foolish by trying to pass them or by trying to get around them. What we do, if someone irritates us and someone makes us feel bad, we say, peace, peace. And rather than speeding up, we just slow down a little bit, get in the right-hand lane and just take it easy and just sort of dawdle our way home. Now, what is a sign you see on the freeway? You see a sign, in California at least, it says, all vehicles towing a trailer are limited to 55 miles an hour. All vehicles! And you're driving the limit of the freeway at 70, and these semi-trailer trucks are buzzing right along with you, 70 miles an hour. People towing house trailers are going 70 miles an hour. People towing trailers full of furniture, moving things, are 70 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Now, they're not stopped, or at least not many of them are stopped. They're not stopped. Why are they not stopped? Because that's what they have in their consciousness. They have in their consciousness that they're driving 70 miles an hour. Now, let's just look at the law. Why is the law saying you should drive 55 miles an hour if you're towing a trailer? It has been proven to the Safety Council of the State Highway Department that if you drive faster than that, you do not maintain as much control as you could have of your vehicle at all times. Because it's a secondary vehicle, not built, the trailer is not built like your car. It's not built in the perfection of your car. It's a temporary vehicle that you pull on behind it for a little ways. Semi-trailers, of course, are built quite differently, but still, they're trailers. Now, why is it that the police do not stop those people who are driving that fast? Well, we don't know. But have you ever been stopped by the police? Have you ever been stopped by the highway patrol for doing something silly? I was driving down the road one time, and I had two little earbuds in my ears listening to a talk, and a police car stopped me. And he said, and I had taken the earbuds out, he said, you had two earbuds in your ears. And I said, you were very observant. And he said, you can't do that. He said, the law is a new law because of all these iPods, iPhones and stuff, and you can't do that. And I said, well, whatever the law is, I cooperate. And so he didn't do anything. He didn't give me a ticket or anything, but he warned me. Now, why would he stop me with two earbuds in my ears and not stop a trailer, a car pulling a trailer in excess of the speed limit? Now, I'm not saying he should do that. I'm just saying that is an illustration to me that the law-enforcing people can be irrational. They can do things sort of disconnectedly at times. So what do I do? I do not become irritated at the law enforcement people. I merely say, all is in divine order now. I am the absolute, the ideal chauffeur. I am the ideal chauffeur. I am the ideal chauffeur. That means I drive with perfection. I drive with an A rating. I drive perfectly everywhere I go. I follow all the rules. I listen to all the rules. I know all the rules of the highway. I follow them. I follow. Now, I'm saying this. Does Caesar ever mess up with his dogs? Occasionally. When he lets himself be distracted. When he lets himself be distracted, the dogs sometimes go off on their own. But the moment he remembers that he's the pack master and he has a responsibility to his pack to keep them all in order, then he's back on duty and the pack is back on duty. When I drive my car down the freeway, I say, I am the ideal chauffeur. I am the ideal chauffeur. What it does, it causes me to be alert to being the ideal chauffeur. And in that way, everything I do is harmonious. Now, all the people driving around me are ideal chauffeurs too, because they're my reflection. They're all doing beautiful things. Even people who drive trailer-towing vehicles, they drive 55 miles an hour. Oh, Herb, come on, that's a fairy tale. No. When I choose to be alert and say, all is in divine order, everything that the law requires in the temporary relative world is handled properly. Do I want to handle everything properly in the temporary manifest world? Do I want to be a relative being? Do I want to be a human being? Do I want to be in this world? Well, I'm here. I put myself here for some wonderful reason. And now, am I going to cooperate with the world where I find myself? Just imagine if you found yourself on Mars, and Mars had different rules for driving. Mars said, everyone drives at 3 miles an hour. 3 miles an hour? My goodness sake. Now, Mars is a very strange place. No. Everyone is courteous to everyone else. Everyone moves lovingly, joyfully, not ploddingly, but joyfully and lovingly through life. There is no rush. There is no tension. There is no feeling of anxiety of any kind. And everyone is peaceful and walking, riding, doing anything, 3 miles an hour. You say, well, my goodness, you'd never get anywhere. That's because you have no place to go. That's because you have nothing to achieve. You're just out being yourself and having fun. And you say, wow, I don't know if I could handle that. If you went to Mars and that was their rule, you can be sure you would handle it very well. Now, what's one of the things that happens to you when you're on the moon? When you're on the moon, you can take a jump, and you'll jump the length of a football field. Amazing, isn't it? The gravity is quite different than you're used to. So you have to act differently on the moon than you would on Earth. If you want to jump and go that far, that's fine. But if you want to pick up a little stone, you can't jump over to it. You have to just gently walk to it slowly as you can, because your gravity is handled differently. Now, you wouldn't, after a little while, you would acclimate yourself to the gravity on the moon. You'd acclimate yourself to the gravity on Mars. You'd acclimate. What would happen to you if you were walking on the sun? If you were walking on the sun like you walk on the Earth, you would go bang, because the gravity is so tremendous on the sun that it would just, you probably couldn't even lift up your feet. How could people walk on the sun? Well, nobody walks on the sun, you say. Herb, that's a fantasy. No. Just understanding that the gravity of the sun is what it is, The gravity of the moon is what it is. The gravity of the earth is what it is. Wherever we are, we live in the relative world, which it is. Now, what would happen to you if you went to the planet of unconditional love? Would you be angry? Would you be upset? Would you be wanting to hurt people? Would you be wanting to do mean things? What would happen to you on the planet of unconditional love? You would be absolutely unconditional love. Every thought in your mind would be unconditional love. There'd be no other thought in your mind except unconditional love. You would be loving yourself, loving your environment, loving your world. You would be so loving, it would be just something imaginable, unimaginable. Now think about that. If you say you're living in a relative world and you're making observations of your relative world, is the planet of unconditional love a temporary thing? It can be. Is it perhaps evidence of absolute, evidence of that which is forever true, that which says all things are unconditional love, no judgment at all? Can you visualize such a thing? You want to, but can you visualize such a thing? Can you cooperate with the rules of any universe in which you are, in which you find yourself? Can you cooperate with any organization, any activity, any thing that's going on in this world here, this planet Earth? Or do you have an attitude about some of the things that are going on here and you're saying, that's not too cool, that's not too good, and I don't like the way these things are done, I don't like... The moment you have those, you have left the planet of unconditional love. The moment we... You see, here on Earth, we have a zillion, quadrillion illusions, and we call these illusions ways of life. And a loving person and a hateful person are both using the same principle. A joyous person and an inharmonious person are both using the same principle. A wise person and a stupid person are both using the same principle. Neither is wrong or right. Now, when you say you'd like to live on planet Earth in the most beautiful, right way, what are you saying? You're saying you want to live on planet Earth as a beautiful, harmonious, joyful activity where everyone likes everybody else, where all things are working together for the good of everybody. That's what you're saying you'd like to do. But you cannot do that if you yourself are not going to be 100% practitioner of what you think you'd like to do. Now, how do we train ourselves to be 100% practitioner of the things that we'd like to do? How do we train ourselves to be in the relative world, be making observations of what's going on around us, knowing that they're just temporary? How can we be masters of ourselves? How can we be the leader of a pack? You have a pack which is a reflection of you in your world. You look at the people around you, you look at the circumstances around you, and they are a reflection of who you are inside yourself. Now, do you like it? Would you like to have some improvements there? Would you like to have some upgrading there as far as it goes? Or are you satisfied? Well, you're not satisfied. The reason you're not satisfied, you're listening to this lecture. And the reason you're listening to this lecture is because you feel that you are a master already. And you're listening to the lecture of the School of the Master merely as a courtesy to me. And you're really not believing one word that I'm saying. And I'm saying this to all of you from the point of view that if you believed what I'm saying, you would say of yourself, I like me. I am number one. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. My body is whole and perfect. You would never have an unhappy experience in your body. You'd never have an unhappy experience in your mind. And then I say, in my thought, in my attitude, I've returned to my original purity and integrity. Now, what is your and my original purity and integrity? What is it? It's what we're designed to be. Now, what are you and what am I designed to be? You are designed to be the most delightful, fantastic being in the world, the most harmonious being in the world, the richest person in the world, the happiest person in the world. Everything's going for you. That's what you're designed to be. Now, are you expressing it? You can't say, I'm not it, but are you expressing it? We talked about the J. Paul Getty kid who tried to hitchhike around the world and be a pauper, but he took the family credit cards along with him. Can you pretend that you're poor when you know that you're rich? You have to be a very good actor. You have to be a very good actor. Now, what are the actors? In the theater, in the movies, and what have you, the actors are pretending that they're someone else. And how well they pretend they are that somebody else is how well they are being an actor. Now, is it true, or is it the relative? Is it just a temporary appearance that they're having there? Yes, it's a temporary appearance. Now, why is it that they are so good at that temporary appearance? One woman played the role of Queen Elizabeth. And as she played this role of Queen Elizabeth herself said, you've done a good job. And she did a good job. She studied the queen. She studied how she talked and how she acted and how she studied her personality so she became like the queen herself. And in her thinking, in her acting, in her way, she was just like the queen. And when you see her on the movie, you look at her and you say, wow, that queen is a bad lady. Wow, that queen is a good lady. Wow, that queen is a thoughtful lady. Wow, that queen is a thoughtless lady. And then you say to yourself, is this what the queen wants to do? Is this the image the queen wants to give to the world? Why did this lady have these conflicting attitudes of how the queen should be? Because that's what the queen allows herself to be. Is the queen always going to be a Princess Diana? Is she always going to be a loving, gentle, fantastic person who uplifts everybody? Or is she going to forget sometime and be a mean, cussed person because she has mental attitudes that cause her disturbance and so on? She doesn't have to. She doesn't have to ever forget who she is. If she is number one, if she is beautiful, she will do everything that's beautiful. And if she has to make a judgment on somebody who has done something bad and she has to bring them down for it, she will say, that's not my call. That is the Prime Minister's call. I do not judge anybody. I am a role model for who I am and what I am. I am the role model for the people of England. I am the role model of the Queen. And if anything has to be done unkindly or badly, and it doesn't have to be done because I am that role model, if anything has to be done, that responsibility falls on somebody else, not me. I do not say we go to war. I do not say that we have these problems. I say all is in divine order now. I live it. I experience it. I am it. And this is all that I am. It's all that is. You and I, we have a tendency to fall too closely to the relative world, fall too closely to the observations we see. But if we can be a good pack leader for our world, we will be the happiest, most successful people that the world has ever known, starting right now.